The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol. Only one place to start today's show, and that's at Goodison, with Everton beating tabletoppers Arsenal by 1-0. Sean Dyche's first game in charge. Tarkowski scoring the only goal of the match. It would come on the hour mark. Arsenal far from their best, but who could have predicted this result?
It might sound a little bit daft, but they're playing Everton away at Goodison Park. Now, Everton will lead on crowd noise, atmosphere, intimidation. That's one side that we saw last year when they were trying to get in the top four. They fell slightly short on.
Don, you're the only man on the planet that thinks playing against Everton's a tough one at the
moment. Banging on about the depth of squad. Everton apparently are going to thrash Arsenal.
The crowd of Everton.
They'd be really supportive of late.
Listen.
Imagine if Everton win now against Arsenal. Don's going to be coming in.
If Everton beat Arsenal, I'll pay Stevie's 50 bucks.
Oh, careful,
no, I never
careful.
Said that. What are
you doing? No.
Oh, man.
He wasn't even supposed to be on today, but here he is, invite himself on.
There is a massive caveat to this conversation.
Do you not hear that?
What's that?
That's me off the hook.
No, there is a huge, of course...
Caveat. Go and tell him.
This was when Frank Lampard was still in charge, Don, so you don't get it.
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't count.
Not on a technicality.
It's not a technicality.
They got a proper manager in now. That's the uplift. But I tell you what, where are we starting, Everton or Arsenal?
Wherever you want to.
We have to start with Arsenal. Look, we'll get to Everton for Don's sake in a minute.
Yeah.
But nobody said it was going to be easy. I suppose there's going to be some, I don't know if it's Stevie or Don or you, I suppose there might be some now who are out there thinking, great, this is it, Arsenal, it's over, they're going to fold. It's a bump in the road.
Right.
Their record at Goodison is not great. The pitch was bumpy, they did not play well. They had the new manager effect, of course, really well organised Everton, we'll get to them. And they didn't play well. Martinelli, Saka, flashes, but not much. Martinelli taking off. Martin Odegaard, arguably his worst game for a long time, taking too many touches, and Everton really pressing in the middle of the park. Doucouré, Onana, Idrissa Gueye really worked hard in there with the white guys. Who were they again? Iwobi and Dwight McNeil. Sean Dyche wanted width, he wanted crosses, he wanted hard work, he got it. Arsenal couldn't handle it. Eddie Nketiah, who's been brilliant, they didn't really see him. He had one chance in the first half. So it was a day where Arsenal must have been in the hotel last night, and Arteta must have been saying, listen, guys, you know what's coming here.
Right.
You know what's coming, right? That Sean Dyche, new manager, they've been running their socks off all week, bleep tests, big foot up the backside, we need a response, and Arsenal had to be ready for it. And they had their poorest game for quite some time and didn't deserve to get anything. So, yeah, it was a bad day at the office for them.
Why was it such a bad day, Steve? Why didn't they
Bad timing. Bad timing. I mean, honestly, it would have been tough for any team to go to Goodison today with the circumstances, quite frankly. And teams that win the league lose games. You don't know when it's coming.
Right.
You just know it's coming. It's just timing. It's bad timing. Arteta would know exactly. As Craig said, he would have said to them, look, you know what you're going to get here. And as much as the manager tells you, and you do know it, you still think, well, we're just going to play our football. But when a team just basically says, well, we're not going to let you play your football, then you get that result today. I mean, the fact that they go ahead as well, I mean, it's just a perfect storm. The fact that they go ahead means that they can still run, they can still chase. Because watching the game, I'm thinking, there's no way they can keep this up for 90 minutes.
Right.
But the fact that they get the goal, then the crowd's even louder. Everything points towards an upset, and that's what we got.
If this game had been, all right, being at home, you've got somewhat of an advantage, but if this game had been at the Emirates and Dyche had just come in, I think Arsenal would have still wiped the floor with them. Because they'd have zipped it around in that pitch. And I was talking about it with Augie this morning on digital. The pitch definitely played its role because Arsenal couldn't get into the stride with their passing game. It was bobbling around, they're taking those couple of extra touches, and by that time, Everton were... Because the manager was on the touchline, he was shouting, he was tucking people in, he was making sure they pushed up. Arsenal couldn't play their game today, and that's credit Everton.
Don, I think out of everyone, you've been the least enthusiastic about Arsenal's chances of keeping this up. Do you agree with the boys this is a bump in the road, or is it a sign of something more serious?
No, I think it's just a bump in the road. This is the reason why I predicted that Everton could take points off them, because I know what Goodison's like. Goodison's one of the most emotional grounds you can play at. When it's rocking and when the fans are high, they're right up there. And when it's low, they're lower than a snake's belly. So I knew that, you know, even if Frank Lampard was in charge, he probably wouldn't have got the result because he likes to try and play football. Sean Dyche has got his team set up today in a 4-5-1. His three midfield players were absolutely magnificent. Decore, who Frank Lampard binned a couple of weeks ago, hasn't been training with the first team. Sean Dyche put him straight into the 11, and he showed everyone what a good player he is. Anana was, I think, man of the match today. Idrissa Gueye does what he does. So he got lots of legs in closing down in the middle of the park. Listen, they weren't outstanding, but I wouldn't necessarily say Arsenal were poor neither. I just thought, as Steve said, it was the perfect storm. It's Goodison Park. It can happen. It was Sean Dyche's first game. So Everton take great hope and take comfort in the fact that played 1-1-1 under a new manager. They can start looking up the table a little bit, try and reel one or two teams in. But Arsenal have got to, they've got to react. They've got to bounce back. They've got to show character.
Decore played almost as like a... It was almost like a 4-4-1-1 because the wide guys... Because, look, there's no point... He tried to get up and support Calvert-Lewin, who isn't fully fit and played an hour or so. But then he was, you know, enough to get back in, and big, strong, physical boy, to get back in and help. And that allowed Dwight McNeil in particular. They switched over in the first half, McNeil and Iwobi. But when McNeil was on the left side and he was able to whip balls in, I mean, you've got Calvert-Lewin in there. There's no point playing him and not having width and putting the ball in the box. And actually, Decore should have had himself a goal in the first half. We saw the clip from Calvert-Lewin with the Anana run. There was another one from across, I think it was from Iwobi, and Decore was 6 yards out or 7 yards out, missed his header. So it's clear what Sean Dyche is going to try and do. He's not... Look, I think the Everton fans at the moment understand what they've got. They didn't sign anybody in the transfer window. His squad's his squad. It's a clean slate. Bad apples were bad apples under Frank Lampard, but they can't be under Sean Dyche. He has to just wipe that clean and say, listen, we go again here, but we need to play to your strengths. We're not going to play out like City and Arsenal. But we've got to be tight in midfield, we've got to be tidy on the ball, and we've got to use our width and these physical players we've got up front. And if you'd have said to me 2 weeks ago when Lampard was still in charge, unfortunately for him, I would have said they've gone. They're going to go down. But purely because this guy, whether you're a Sean Dyche fan or not, knows how to manage his players. And I think Everton will be fine.
How's Lampard feeling sat home watching all these players suddenly giving 100%, suddenly committed to the cause, giving 90 minutes?
I think Frank's been around long enough that he understands how the game works. And the easy thing is to say that and think, where was this running last week?
Yeah.
But it's all psychological. And I always tell you that half the game is played between your ears. And today's a great example. You know, I am absolutely certain that Frank Lampard asked his players in all the other games this season to close the ball, stop the ball at source, make it difficult for your opponents. These are all things that Sean Dyche would be saying, but it's a different time. And as I said before, the timing was bad for Arsenal.
So at some stage, the players stop listening, they're just not as committed to the old manager?
No, when you're losing game after game, and then particularly losing at home, your mind starts asking. You start asking questions about yourself as much as anything. Am I good enough? I was terrible last week. Am I going to be picked? I'm going to have to do this. I mean, you're thinking about all these other things. When a new manager comes in, gets the brush out, all of a sudden the cobwebs are all thrown away, and the only thing he's asked you to do is run.
Right.
I bet you there was no...
So just keep it just simple, bare bones.
And that's how... They only had 30% of the ball. And so that tells you that when they didn't have it, they got the basics right. They closed the ball quickly, regardless. They stopped the crosses. You know, they made, if they were going to let Arsenal play, they took them to an area where they wanted to go. Martinelli never got a sniff out of Coleman. Same on the other side. Mikhailenko came sacking nothing. That's probably the worst game we've ever seen from Saka this season. And Odegaard couldn't get involved in the game because they couldn't really get him the ball because of those three rattles in the middle of the park. They just ran all day and closed the ball down. So, listen, it shows everybody else that if you close the ball quickly against Arsenal, you can knock them off the stride. Problem is, it's not easy to do that from the first minute to the last minute the way that Everton did. And the reason they did it is because psychologically they've got a new manager, they're fighting for their life, and it was really basic.
I don't think Everton will see that. I don't think we'll see this Everton to the end of the season. I don't.
But we'll see enough of it.
I think we'll see enough of it, but...
At home.
Particularly at Goodison. I don't think players were not trying for Lampard. I mean, Donald know better than us, but the word coming out of Everton, well, the fans were actually, even at the end when he was sacked, were saying, listen, we respect you.
Right.
You tried to embrace the club and what it was about and the supporters, and you gave it your best shot, but for whatever reason, and, you know, players, tactics, formations, but even silly little things like during the game when... Everton had a throw-in down the left-hand side by the technical area, and Iwobi wanted to go wide right in case that ball got out there. And Dyche was like, get in here, because if this breaks down, I need you a little bit tighter. It's just silly little things that Everton were too open, they were too easy to beat, they were too easy to play against. In the end, under Frank Lampard, that's why they picked up so few points. And I think the first thing Dyche will try and do, obviously, is make them really difficult to play against and then go from there.
We'll talk about the implications of that game and relegation a little bit later on. Of course, a huge game then on Sunday now between Spurs and Manchester City, with Pep Guardiola's side having the opportunity to close the gap at the top of the table and put more pressure on Arsenal. According to the bookies, City are favourites to win 11-8 on Spurs, the outsiders, despite the home advantage. Just take a look at everyone's predictions for this tie. City favourites, so let's just take a look at what everyone's gone for. Stephen's gone for a 2-1. Craig's gone for a 2-1 as well. 3-1 for myself. 2-1 for Don as well. There you go. We'll, of course, be looking back at that game on the next edition of ESPN FC. So be sure to join us.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Liverpool's struggles continued and then some as they were beaten 3-0 at Molineux against Wolves. They were found themselves 2-0 down in the opening 12 minutes. Matip with the own goal, Dawson then getting a second. Neves would make it 3-0 in the 71st minute. You take a look at the table, Liverpool currently sitting 10th, 11 points off a top four spot. It just gets worse and worse, Stevie.
That first 15 minutes has to be the worst so far of the season.
But why, Stevie? They had the whole week to prepare.
Do you know what?
They're gone.
They asked Klopp and he couldn't tell you.
Yeah, well, there's the problem. They've gone.
When you say gone, what do you mean?
There's nothing. Well, you know, a team that was so good last year and could have won four trophies, that quadruple, we were so close, they were playing such good football to be in this position. There's nothing. There's nothing he's saying or doing. Even if you gave him 10 days off,
right?
There's nothing he's saying or doing is making a jot of a difference. Mm. There's no changes to the team is making a jot of a difference. These players all carried them to Premier League and Champions League, pretty much. There's one or two exceptions. And nothing he's doing is having... put it one way. After the first period when he came in, almost everything Klopp did, said, signed, had an effect on this Liverpool team in a positive way. Nothing he's doing now is making a jot of a difference. They've absolutely gone at the moment, and there's no sign of that turning.
The start of the game tells you what Craig's saying is right. Because there is no question that some of the things that Klopp would be talking about would be starting the game properly. Do the first thing you do, make sure you do it right. Do it well. Don't let them take the initiative. You know, it's all positivity. It's all, this is about us and we need to do that. And then the whistle goes and everybody in red just did that and backed off. They backed off. They did. There was nobody closing the ball. There was nobody making a challenge. Nobody was taking any initiative to do anything. They just ran around in a fog, in a haze for 15 minutes till they were 2-0 down. And then all of a sudden, they started getting in the game. So what Craig says, right, you can't start the game the way they did if they're listening to the manager winding them up before the game. So clearly, the message isn't getting through. At the same time, and I'm going to say it again for about the 10th week in a row. If you keep setting your team out to play a certain way and they keep showing you that they can't do it anymore, time after time after time, then you have to change it. And not only do you have to change it because it's not working, you have to change it just to try and spur something.
Right.
I mean, you talk about monotonous. You know, we all get in ruts and you have to change something, right? Well, he's not changing anything.
Well, he's changed some of the personnel. He's just doing this. Bicic is coming. Fabinho was out. Milner, Henderson.
But he's been doing it since the start of the season. He's continually changing it. Okay, he's got injuries. But he's tried every single change, personnel, and it's still not working. So you've got to change the way you play. You can't just keep throwing them out in the same shape, using the same players who time after time showed you that right now they can't do it. So why would you keep doing it? It makes no sense.
Don, what's the answer?
If anyone knew the answer, Jurgen Klopp would know the answer. I think you're looking at a team, when you looked at that 11 there, Dan, and there's probably Bacicic in the middle of the park who's fresh into the side, that's playing okay. There's Alisson in the middle of the goals who's playing okay. The rest of them, every single one of them, when you look at that, you look Andy Robertson, Trent, Matip, Gomez, Keita, Thiago, Gakpo, Nunez, Salah, all out of form. So you pick 11 players, there's 9 of them that's out of form. They're leaking goals. They don't close down in the middle of the park. That's 3 there. It's not a Jurgen Klopp midfield 3. Never will be. There's not enough energy. There's not enough height. There's not enough strength in there. There's no power. So the front men ain't scoring goals. I mean, Wolves are the lowest scoring Premier League team this season in the Premier League. Just put 3 past Liverpool. I mean, every single week, it's sort of, we're sort of writing a brand new low for Liverpool. My immediate worry is when Jurgen Klopp has the conversation with FSG in the summer, because there must be a reason why they didn't go for anyone in January in the window. They must be preparing for something big in the summer. This rebuild for Liverpool is going to cost probably close to 200 million.
Yeah, but you talk about that and obviously you think, oh, well, Jude Bellingham. Why on earth would Jude Bellingham go to Liverpool at the moment?
Because Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool are still a sell. You're looking at a team that's been out of form in 7 years. Jurgen Klopp's been there. You're looking at a team that's out of form in what, 5 months, 6 months? So it's still a pull. He can be given the Liverpool number 8 shirt, the new Steven Gerrard. That's all the talk that's happening behind the scenes. And then say, listen, this is a one-off. We'll win the Premier League next year. We'll win the Champions League next year, but you must join. Anyway, parking that, £200 million. My worry is, if he puts his hand at Jurgen Klopp and FSG and the owners say no, my worry is he might say, what can I do? And he might just walk away because he needs help. We're looking at Chelsea spending £600 million. Liverpool need massive financial help off the owners in the summer. That's my worry. What are they going to do to help the manager?
I'm kind of with you in a way, and I'm kind of not. £200 million, by the way. Enzo Fernandez has just gone for £120 million, so you're getting a player and a half at top quality. Unless you can go out and nick a bargain, if you think Gakpo's a bargain, it's been difficult for him, but he's coming into a poor side at the moment. But we keep talking about these rebuilds, right? What am I missing? We've got Diaz to come back. Okay, he's out, but when he comes back. But still, Salah and Nunes, 100 million plus Nunes, right? Fabinho, Champions League, you know, all these players are top players. Van Dijk, Gomez, Matip, Kanate, they were all around. Robertson, Trent Alexander-Arnold. What am I missing here? Where's the rebuild?
Well, the rebuild's the middle of the park.
Well, I've just mentioned. Who? Henderson, Milner, Fabinho, Keita, Thiago. Right, they're all players that have won Premier League. Are you saying they're finished? And it's just the players, manager?
I'm not saying they're finished, but what I would say is when you look at Jordan Henderson and Fabinho especially, I never saw the drop-off in standards and the amount of the lack of closing down that Fabinho can't do all of a sudden. So I think when you look at what Liverpool have got to work with in terms of goalkeepers, backline and front men, you know, most coaches in Europe would want Liverpool's backline and front men. The obvious answer, especially when you look at the three today, those three technically are good players. They're not Jurgen Klopp midfield players. They're not the guys that rat around and feed it to the front men like Gini Wijnaldum done and Jordan Henderson and Fabinho in their prime were doing.
But listen,
these are three technical players that you're looking at today.
Fabinho just never stopped being able to shot the ball down, right? It just didn't happen. He just never all of a sudden woke up and he couldn't shut the ball down. It looks like it because he's a consequence of Klopp allowing this team to get away from what made it special, and that's the intensity. We're just not seeing the intensity in this Liverpool side that
we saw. I don't think they can do it, Craig.
There's a bottom line here, right? Jurgen Klopp, they're at a place where it comes the summer, if this continues, they won't sack him. And rightly so, because he's turned water into wine in some respect. But there might come a time he looks at his position at this club and the success he's had and think, right, do I forgo this few million pound contract, whatever it is, and I'll walk away because I cannot turn this around. This team looks like a team that Jurgen Klopp needs to come in and fix. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It looks like a team that he needs to come in and fix.
But he's
and
only
pick
going to be able to do that with buying new players.
Exactly.
How is he going to fix it?
But what I'm saying is it looks like a team that a manager's been sacked and he would come in and fix it. That's what he's turned them into. These players, everybody's talking about Liverpool new players. What about all these guys that are there?
The question is,
if we're blaming Lampard and all these other players for Everton not playing well, why is Klopp not to blame for this scenario?
He does have to carry some blame. But he's built up a lot of goodwill, which means that you have to give him an opportunity to try and rebuild. And I'm with Don. It's the middle of the park. And you're talking about the intensity. Fabinho doesn't look as though he has that intensity in him now. Henderson doesn't. Oxlade-Chamberlain doesn't.
Well, they had the intensity six, 7 months ago.
He did 6, 7 months ago, but he doesn't have it now.
So 7 months is gone.
It looks like it.
Is that not a
contract? He hasn't done anything.
No, I understand.
He hasn't done anything from the start of the season for anybody to be confident. It's gone on for such a long period of time, let me put it that way, that it makes you wonder whether it's going to come back with him in particular. But the others, Keita was 70 million. He just right. hasn't been good enough. Mm. He's never been fit, but even when he's been fit, he's just not been good enough. We all know James Milner's good for the squad player. As we say, I think Henderson, yes, his legs aren't what they are. Thiago Alcantara on the ball, yes, he's fantastic. But the Liverpool that was dominant was a team that had the intensity Craig's talking about. He can't do that. He's not going to go and do that and squeeze up behind the front three when they were at their very best. So they don't. It looks like they don't have anybody in the middle of the park. Right. And I'm talking about anybody.
So who's turned the fullbacks into poor players?
Who's turned the centre-halves into poor players? But the back line can be worked with. The back line right now...
Well, it doesn't seem
is
like all, it.
The back line right now is not playing as a unit the way it was. It's not. Alexander-Arnold hasn't changed any. We knew he couldn't defend. Said that from the start. Said that 4 years ago. Robertson needs to just concentrate on what his job is. He's a consequence of everything else as well, because he's finding himself half and half. He's finding himself not as far forward as he used to be, but then defensively, he's not far enough back that he can make a difference. So there are so many consequences of the problems coming from the middle of the park. There's a reason why... excuse me. There's a reason why we say you've got to dominate the middle of the park. It's the engine room. It's this, it's that. But because everything works off it. That's the heartbeat of the team.
Well, one second. Nobody looked at this Liverpool squad at the start of the season. let's roll it out here. Nobody looked at this Liverpool squad at the start of the season and said they're all finished.
No.
Nobody.
Absolutely
right,
not.
Right, nobody.
Correct.
Man City didn't... All right, Man City spent a lot of money. Liverpool have spent a fair bit. And obviously, Chelsea have gone nuts. Man City didn't go out and buy six players. Unless I'm missing some. Right, they got Akanji and they got Haaland. Liverpool, off the top of my head, obviously Gakpo January, but they got Nunez. Mm-hmm. Two... All right, Haaland's further down the road in his progression, but they're £200 million players. So there wasn't a lot of difference. It's not like Pep Guardiola and Man City went out and bought a new half a team. They didn't. At the start of the season, Liverpool spent the money. They spent almost, you know, the same as City. Nobody at the start of the season said, oh, Robertson's finished, Alexander, this can't continue, Van Dijk's stuffed, the midfield's gone, the front line's horrible. Nobody.
No.
So... 7 months down the line, all those facets of the team are not working.
Well, think about
who has to take the responsibility for that? The manager.
But it helps. Right.
But he has to be able to rebuild it. He has to be able to change it.
But you're rebuilding. I don't understand what you're rebuilding when you never...
You're rebuilding the middle of the park.
At the start of the season, did you look at the middle of the park and go, oh, that needs a rebuild?
Well, no. But
well,
you,
exactly.
Listen, you just said it. You just said it about 20 seconds ago. 7 months ago, nobody said. 7 months is a long time. 7 months is a long time to not be able to run around and be as intense as you used to be. You know, if a team goes through a couple of month period or five or six games where everybody looks a little sluggish, then okay. But to be doing it for 7 months and think that, what, it's just all of a sudden it's not just
I'm
going
not
to change.
It.
All of a sudden you've got to
I'm
think, hold on a second, there's a bigger problem here.
I'll give you James Milner at his edge. I'll give you James Milner at his edge and I'll give you Thiago.
Well, tell me why Henderson never plays 90 minutes. Why does Henderson never play 90 minutes?
Henderson's been off the bench and on the bench and been used and not used for 24 months now, right?
When was the last time he played 90? He hasn't played 90 minutes all season.
Okay, there were two teams, of course, involved. Wolves with a massive 3 points for them and helps their survival hopes, doesn't it? Let's take a look at the bottom of the table. Saints in real trouble. They lost 3-0. Bournemouth lost against Brighton. Everton were out of the relegation zone for a moment. They are back in it now. Where do you stand, Don? Saints are done?
Yeah, I think Nathan Jones has got it all on there. I think Bournemouth, I think the bottom two will definitely go. Then I think you're looking at a fight. I mean, I wouldn't rule Leicester out from dropping, you know. They got a decent win today, but they've got bad fixtures coming up. Pardon?
Big win. They beat Villa, of course, 4-2 today.
Great win. That game could have been anything. It could have been 6-5 against, but they're on the right side of it. I think the likes of Forest, Wolves, West Ham will be okay. I think Leeds might drop as well. So you're probably looking at five teams in it, in my opinion.
Have you got? Saints are done.
Right, yeah. I've got Saints. Yeah, he's out his depth, I think. I mean, I heard somebody say today, I saw a report from, I think it was one of the local Southampton journalists saying that he'd said, Nathan Jones, that is, I've been listening to people trying to convince me and I'm just going to do it my own way now. He's 3 months into the job. He should have been doing it his own way and blagging his...
Like Stevenson, you know. Who's he been listening to?
I don't know who's, I'd have to know who he's been listening to.
Well, I don't know. Maybe like some... He reads the local press. Like, yep. They say they don't. Maybe he is. And he's like, oh, play him. But I don't know. Anyway, I think they've gone. Probably go Bournemouth. I think Forest, even though they keep signing, I think they're going to be hovering around it in Leeds.
Yeah.
So that's four. And then I was going to say Wolves. I think West Ham are going to be fine for me. Everton.
Right.
Long. I think they'll be okay, but I think they'll be hovering around it, particularly with their away form.
Manchester United took all 3 points in their clash against Crystal Palace. Goals from Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford was enough to see them get it done. However, Casemiro sent off. He'll miss the next 3 matches. That straight red card. This is what Ten Hag had to say about the sending off. You see, this team stands up for each other. It's such a good spirit for the team, and they don't like it when a player can be badly injured, and that's the way Anthony got treated. This team sticks together, but you have to control your emotions. Casemiro will now miss the next 3 United matches, all in the league.
Okay, maybe he's just protecting his team a little bit, but I think what he, in the dressing room, what he has to be saying is, like, well, there's 2 things here. Well, more than that, United were very professional up to that point. The game was in cruise control. They were playing well enough against a Palace team that didn't create anything. And Rashford got that second goal, and Palace they were hanging on at the end, United. But it came about. Sloop and Anthony got involved a little bit, and Anthony went off, and there's a slope as it goes off at most clubs, and at Old Trafford it goes away there. And it wasn't the worst, but unfortunately, he's a little niaff, right? He's a little pain. He's Fernandes 2.0. Right. Fernandes has got better, but I've watched him recently, right? And he's got a bit of that complaining about everything about him when somebody touches him.
This is Anthony, yeah?
This is Anthony, right? And because he reacted, and I'm not saying Schlupp was blameless, right? But because of his reaction, the melee starts, and then Casemiro should know better.
Yeah.
Right? But because that little pain in the backside, right, who thinks he is a £200 million player, when really he's just doing okay, causes the melee, and that means people get involved. Now, he should still know better than putting his hands around somebody's neck. But That's what set it all off. Mm-hmm. And he is a pain, by the way.
Ditto, basically, yeah. I mean, that's it. And
Leeds and Leicester, Don. Big miss? Big enough to drop
points?
Yeah,
it'll be a big miss. No, I think they can get through the couple of Leeds games and the Leicester game without him. Of course, he changes the needle when he plays because he's such a great player, and I think he's made a massive difference. Craig is right, though. When Jeffrey Schlupp bumped into Anthony, there's a massive slope off the pitch where I think could be a proper danger to the players. And I think that's what upset Anthony. I think where Man United fans are getting at, when they see Casemiro being sent off for grabbing Will Hughes across the throat, which was quite rightly the right decision, it was violent conduct. There was another image, and I'm pretty sure it was Jordan Ayew who then grabbed, I think, Fred by the throat as well. So they're saying VAR actually missed a red card for Palace in the same time, in the same melee, but it must have been difficult for all the fixtures, the officials trying to figure out what was going on. But I think United will be fine. I think they're playing, their football's too good, and they'll have them back for the cup final.
Hey, United are loving it, though. Really good weekend for them overall, because, of course, well, Liverpool lost, Arsenal lost, and we saw Newcastle dropping points as well. They're in action against West Ham. This one would finish one apiece. Wilson would open the scoring. West Ham better, though, in the latter stage of the first half. Paqueta making it 1-1. It's about the right result. Yeah. For Newcastle side, just maybe lost. Just a little edge at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, we've been talking about it the last few weeks. They just, after the World Cup, they've got to the cup final, and that's great, and there was a fantastic atmosphere there at St James's Park the other night. But Wilson scored a great goal early on, and there was a goal chopped off. Then Wilson scored a great goal from the Longstaff pass, who They had to make a change because San Maximum comes in on the wide position. Joel Linton drops deeper because Guimarães is suspended. So that's a big miss for them. But once Wilson scores, West Ham got a gallop up.
Yeah.
And Rice started to control the middle of the park. And Newcastle fell away. And they just not got that spark in their performance that they had in the first three or four months of the season. Almiron is still running around doing stuff. Joel Linton. But that final end product, that sort of pressure, and that intensity is gone. In fact, West Ham were good for a point.
Yeah.
Really good for a point.
They've been playing on such emotion for so many games that eventually that juice is going to run out. You know, they're beginning to realise that to be top dogs, you have to reach a level of consistency that's not ultimately relying on emotion all the time. You know, that's what your top teams do, your Cities and Liverpool at their best and United at their best. This team is realising that it has to find that level without relying on the crowd all the time and without relying on, oh, we're playing against a big team. You have to be able to raise your game against your West Hams and your Leicesters and your Leeds from a professional point of view. And that's kind of why Newcastle might not finish in the top four. And it's kind of why maybe in 3 and 4 years' time, if these owners invest the amount of money they do, a lot of these players won't be there. Because professionally, as good as they can be, or as much ability as they have, they can't sustain their best week in and week out. That's why they won't be there in 3 or 4 years.
You nervous, Don?
Well, for the top four, a little bit. A little bit, Dan. I think what they look like to me, they look like a team that's like an Olympic sprinter and he's dipping for the finish line a little bit too early. It's like they've had such a good season.
17 matches too early.
You did dip your head a couple of times.
That's what the boys are saying with the emotion, because like they're having such a good season. They were sitting in second, a few points behind, I think, Arsenal, who was top at the time, or might be Man City. Now they're sort of dropping down into fourth, and all of a sudden you're looking behind you and you're seeing the likes of Tottenham and Brighton and Brentford, and you're seeing good teams behind you just starting to reel you in a little bit. And the last five games, Dan, they've had four draws. Only scored a couple of goals as well. So the lads are right. It's like they're just... Listen, they're not losing games. I mean, they're still a fortress in James Park. They've not lost a game there. So they're still a hard side to beat. They're just like the fans were a little bit itchy today. They took the lead after 3 minutes. Then you're thinking, right, it could be another great 3 points. Could take yourself back into third, closer to City, closer to Arsenal. You draw another game. And I think that's a testament to how far Newcastle have come when they're actually disappointed to draw a 1-1 at home against West Ham. That shows you how far the team and Eddie Howe have come. So they've just got to try and get their heads down and just try and kick through this period.
They need to get Alexander Isak a run of games. He was out injured after the World Cup. He comes back in, looks sharp, gets his goal at Southampton, I think it was. Then he plays the other night, gets clattered on the head with a free kick or a strike at goal, gets concussion, he's out again. It's putting more pressure. They've let Wood go to Nottingham Forest on loan, although he's a different type of player, but he's an extra body. Wilson got his goal, but his general performance has not been great. So they need Isak to get in the side. But I tell you, the two best players on the park were Declan Rice and Aguerd, the Moroccan left-sided centre-back. The tackle he put on Wilson was magnificent. His general performance was magnificent. And, yeah, you know, West Ham boy, Declan Rice, but come on, it has to be this summer. It just has to be.
We will say thank you very much to Don. Don, though, will be back on Extra Time. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel. And we've got FA Cup replays for you this week. Tuesday, see Sheffield United take on Wrexham. Hopefully that game will be as good as what we saw in the first encounter between these two. That's live on ESPN2 and ESPN+. And then on Wednesday at the Stadium Light, it's just a great game as well when these teams met. It's Sunderland take on Fulham at that game, 2:30 Eastern on Plus.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Borussia Dortmund thrashed Freiburg by 5-1 on Saturday. Freiburg reduced the 10 men early on in this game. And the big story, Sebastian Haller scoring his first goal since coming back from cancer. And let's get some reaction now as Archie caught up with Haller and Terzic after the game.
Sebastian, what a day for Borussia Dortmund. What a day for you personally. Firstly, how would you describe the feeling after you'd nodded the ball in and you're running down in front of 25,000 Dortmund fans and the yellow wall?
Yeah, I was waiting for this moment a long time. So today I could realise how good is it to score a goal. After all those things, was the best thing I could hope, is just score this goal in front of the yellow wall. Give just happiness to the team, to the people. And of course, we won the game by what was the score? I don't even remember.
5-1.
5-1 was a lot. But today I think we enjoy our football. They were quite unlucky with the red card at the 17th minute. So we made the game quite easy for us, for ourselves. And today is just a great victory.
I've seen a lot of your team this season. That seemed like the best performance all round that I can remember, going forward in particular. How did you see it?
Yeah, it was, first of all, a very important win for us, and also the performance was good, especially the beginning of the game when it was 11-11, we had the control over the whole game. But again, we concede a sloppy goal where we didn't put our boot through it and then clear it just. And to be fair, I think the second half was basically the best that we've seen so far this season. It was very clear, very clinical in front of the goal. We created many chances, good passing, good counter pressing, so we didn't let them breathe. And I think it was a great game for us and a very important result as well.
The moment that really captured me was when Sebastian Haller scored, and the crowds, that noise sent a tingle up my spine. What did it do to you?
It was a crazy moment. I think everybody was looking for it last summer. If you sign a new striker, you can't wait him to score in front of our yellow wall. But especially after his story, this was a great and a special moment for him. It was an important goal for us, and you can feel it all over the place. And that's good. And we hope we can continue like this, and he's going to score.
So let's take a look at what that means. Borussia Dortmund now level on points with Bayern Munich in second. Union Berlin 2 points clear at the top of the table. For more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Ali Moreno joins us. Ali, looking at this, are we going to be glass half full or glass half empty in that it's easy to put in your best performance of a season if you're playing against 10 men for much of the game?
Well, it seems like you're leading the witness to get me to go glass half empty. I'm going to say glass half full if you're Borussia Dortmund. It is rare that after a Borussia Dortmund game, we're not talking about their frailties defensively, which we could if we focus on the goal that they gave up. And of course, Schlotterbeck cannot defend, and Niklas Süle is having his difficulties, but he's a better option than Mats Hummels. Let's not talk about that, because we don't need to, really. When you think about Borussia Dortmund and what they do really well, is what they have in the attacking half, and they just have options everywhere. The presence of Sebastian Haller, while it is inspirational and emotional, functionally, I think it's very important for Borussia Dortmund in that he gives them a focal point and a guy that can put a final touch on a cross, that can get on the end of service, that can head a ball in, but also is a guy that can play with his back to goal, hold the play, smart with his movement, and while he attracts attention, then that frees up guys like Adeyemi, it frees up guys like Baino Gittens on the other side, Julian Brandt that he's playing really well, Marco Royce who came back from injury and illness, and I haven't even mentioned Jude Bellingham, and so you start to think about what this team can do in the attacking half, and you get really excited. We haven't even mentioned Gio Reyna off the bench and how hot he is coming off the bench and scoring goals. So there are a lot of names here to get excited about if you're Borussia Dortmund, as long as you focus on the attacking half.
Well, let's talk a little more detail, Sho, about Gio Reyna. That's 3 goals in 4 matches now for the US international. Point to prove?
Well, he's been proving it. And I think the next step for him is, while it's great to have this impact off the bench, you want to get a start here and there. And when you get that opportunity, you got to hang on to it. But as I just mentioned, there is a lot of competition in the attacking half for Borussia Dortmund. So there are a lot of options for Edin Terzic. What I would say is that this was a really tough weekend for Greg Berhalter. And the reason I say that is, once again, Gio Reyna is scoring goals, right? And then the game winner for Union Berlin was Jordan Pefok. So the guy that you did not take to the World Cup scoring goals, and the guy that you took and did not play is also scoring goals. It's not a great look for Berhalter. I guess he doesn't care at this point. But the truth is that for Gio Reyna, in general, what we're seeing is that whenever he gets his chance, he's scoring goals, he's productive. That's all that Edin Terzic can ask for. Now, Gio Reyna has to continue to push, show consistency, stay fit, stay ready to go. And when he gets an opportunity to start, then he better do well. Because if he doesn't, there are a lot of options that can come off the bench and do the job for him.
So the top contenders doing everything right today, registering those victories. You take a look at the odds, though. Bayern are still massive favourites to retain their title. 8-1 on, of course, a victory tomorrow. It's back to the top of the table. Ali, you know what I'm going to ask you? Glass half full, glass half empty with regards to this title race.
Let's go glass half full again. It's Saturday night. Let's have fun with it. It's a title race. And I think Bundesliga wants a title race. And it's, for us, it's a lot more interesting to talk about what a title race could do and signify in Bundesliga. And we always think, well, it's Bayern Munich and then everybody else. But Bayern Munich has opened the door for everybody else to have a chance. And give credit to Borussia Dortmund, who are perfect in 2023. 4 games, 4 wins. Give credit to Leipzig, who has been consistent. Give credit to Union Berlin, who has hung on. And Eintracht Frankfurt continues to play better and continues to get points. And so all these teams are getting in the conversation, while Bayern Munich haven't proven that they can go on a long run. My question, and really my only question to all these teams is, at some point, Bayern Munich is going to string results together. And when that happens, can they keep up? If they answer that question correctly, then yes, we have a title race. Right now, it feels like we're trending in that direction. So yeah, I'll go with a title race.
Ali Moreno, as always, thank you very much. The Bundesliga then continues tomorrow, live on ESPN+. The big game sees Wolfsburg take on Bayern Munich. Preceding that, it's Stuttgart against Werder Bremen.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's it. We're done. Goodbye. Extra time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much for your tweets. Craig with us, Stevie and Don as well. A lot of tweets about Don correctly predicting that Everton would beat Arsenal. We did mention on the show a massive caveat, though. He did that, of course, when Frank Lampard was
still in
charge.
No, he did not predict Everton would beat Arsenal. He said it was a tough place to go.
For Dan, what's worse?
Southampton didn't think so, and all the teams that had beaten them before that.
What's worse, Don being right or Stuart Robinson? Always bashing your team in FIFA. I do like you calling him Stuart Robinson. Don, you was right on the WhatsApp straight away. Go get that clip ready, weren't you, Don?
Get it ready, Dan. Get it ready. Listen, it's just one of them. You just... I just had the feeling, you know. And you, it's just Goodison.
Don't go there.
No, it's just Goodison.
When you said that.
No, it's Goodison. It's the Goodison
still
factor.
In charge. Come on.
No. Goodison can do this to anyone.
Well, how come it couldn't do it to Southampton? And all the teams that beat them when Lampard got the sack.
Craig, just give a man a little bit of credit. No, come on, just give me a little bit of credit where it's due.
Have you been on this show before?
No credit.
Why has he got a jumper and a jacket on in a hoose?
I was working for a different company today, Stevie, so I have to be smart.
No, sometimes you put a sweater on beneath and you have the collar up and then your jacket. It's not your sort of style.
It's not, no.
No, well, obviously.
No.
That big fleecy grey one that's about 18 sizes too big for you, that wouldn't go under your jacket. The one you wear in telly and at the golf.
Oh, the big one. Craig, you...
The grey one. The grey one that was handed down from your great-grandpa's grandpa.
Oh, that one, right?
You've the golf one. That was the one. What about the one that you left at the golf club in Massachusetts? And you said to me... It was left in the boot of a cat, and you said, would you pick it up for me? And I said, yeah, well, I'll put it in a bonfire.
Craig, you're all complaining about Chelsea not registering Badiashile, but also sit there and complain when Chelsea don't have any attacking flair. Why would it make sense to leave out the three big names to help us out going forward when we have enough coverage, ex-Fofana, in defence? So,
what?
Well... Can I speak for you?
We didn't have to... Yeah, go on.
What Craig started talking about and we all agreed with was that Badiashile and Silva, the partnership was great.
Right.
Every other partnership hasn't been particularly great. Koulibaly hasn't been great. Fofana's been out injured. And when Fofana has played, by the way, centre-back,
yeah,
he's not been very good. So, you know, you can't just disregard... Centre-back partnership is probably one of the most important partnerships on the field. So that's what we were talking about.
You are. Stevie's your lawyer.
Wow. Well, I'll answer then. Well, look, exactly what Stevie said.
There you go. Thank you, Your Honour.
You're not going to give yourself a chance if you're defensively weak. What's the old adage about building from the back? And you can still register players like João Felix and add that to Havertz and one or two others. Ziyech is in, who didn't go to PSG, and still have that little bit of flair. Look, you've effectively registered Modric, who you've taken off at half-time in the game. So it's one of those balancing acts. But why would you not register a player who's in your starting 11 now?
Yep.
Yet people who are benched are going to be registered. It just doesn't make sense.
Don, what's more likely, Everton to stay up or City to catch Arsenal?
City to catch Arsenal.
Oh.
Yep.
Having said that, I still think it's a massive rick from Guardiola allowing Cancelo to leave. One of the best fullbacks in European football, in my opinion. That's a massive risk, I think. So he's basically looking after the good of the dressing room because there was a little falling out between the two. So he's looking after the greater good of the dressing room, but at the same time allowing, in my opinion, his best fullback to move on to Bayern.
I think there's been a little sea change in his mindset. That's my summary of what this move has been, because I think now he's got an out-and-out striker, he doesn't need to be as flamboyant.
Right.
And they haven't been. I mean, City have not played as well,
and
obviously they're not doing as well at the moment. They haven't played as well as previous seasons. Their football hasn't been as obliterating to other teams, but they've got enough balls in the box for the big fella to do the damage. And I think he's thinking, do you know what? I could put Laporte or Ake there.
Yeah.
They ain't going to give me what Cancelo's going to give me going forward, but maybe I'm going to be a little bit more solid at the back, and that's going to, and then I'm going to leave it to that lot.
Right.
To get me the
goals. You don't necessarily need a flair fullback anymore.
Not as much. That's maybe one of the things he's thinking about. Possibly.
Well, also the fact that teams seem to have worked out this fullback playing in midfield situation.
Right.
So If he's going away from that, again, that's another reason why you can let him go.
If you're Ten Hag, Stephen, what would you tell Casemiro in the dressing room?
Listen, it's just a, you're not chastising him.
Right.
It's
would it depend on the player?
It's a conversation.
If it's a youngster, like Casemiro's obviously been...
If it's a youngster, it's a different ballgame, because right. You need to teach him a lesson.
Okay.
Whereas with Casemiro, it's, you know better.
Right.
And then Casemiro, experienced in the age he is going to go, I'm sorry, boss, you know, you're right.
Right.
It's one of those conversations. It completely changes depending on who it is.
Okay.
As you said, if this is Garnacho...
Right.
You return it to him and grab him to the throat with two hands.
I don't think you're allowed to. I think no. HR.
No, you're not allowed to do that anymore.
You
used to be allowed to do that.
Like the Simpsons.
I think the Sir Alex Ferguson line would be sort of the great one here, according to former United player Lee Sharp. When Eric Cantona had one of the most controversial things you've ever seen on a sports stadium, when he kung fu kicked a guy, actually went over the advertising hall, was into the stadium, kung fu kicked a man in the crowd, and got banned for a year. And Fergie apparently came in the dressing room and said, and gave the whole team a rollicking for the performance. And then turned to Eric and went, Eric, you can't be doing that. It's such a belter, isn't it?
Fantastic.
Eric, such you can't be line. Doing that. It's like,
For Don, percentage chance of Klopp remaining the Liverpool manager next season.
Oh, my days. I can't be going there, Dan, because I've got two guys to sack already with my predictions.
Well, yes, you said 0%.
He's not getting sacked.
He's either going to walk. That's the thing.
He's not getting sacked.
No, he won't get sacked. Right. He's got too much credit in the bank.
What's the percentage chance of him walking? I think there's I think there's at the moment there's probably a 60% chance.
I'd be disappointed if he walked.
Why?
You know, well, because
would you want another just
because,
season of this?
Just because it's got difficult, you walk. Come on.
No, I'm not. Not because it's got difficult, maybe because he doesn't. In the summer, if it goes that long, he might think he can't affect it anymore.
Finances, Stevie.
It takes a bigger man, Stephen, to walk away and accept.
If he holds his hand out to FSG in the summer and says, "I want £200 million,"
what's
and
he getting
they
for
say
200
no,
million? We had that discussion on the show.
Well, you can get Bellingham and Caicedo. There's two off the top of my head.
Why would they go to Liverpool, Don?
Caicedo's millions of Caicedo's.
You keep saying it, Stan.
200 million is millions of Caicedo's about.
Of course there is. So you can get two quality midfield players for 200 million. My worry is, if FSG turn around and go no, then he might be thinking, what do you want me to do here?
You can, well, listen,
Chelsea
by the way,
are spending £600 million.
You can save this one for the tape as well. He's not going to Liverpool, is he, Bellingham? Go on, you say he is, and then you can watch that when he does.
He is then, and he'll take the number 8 shirt.
But why, Don?
Gerrard
shirt. Why? He's got no link to Liverpool. If you've got Real Madrid
you
knocking
saying
him.
This. Does he go? Well, Ancelotti got asked the question, Dan, a couple of weeks ago. Do you like Jude Bellingham? He went, yes, I like him, but I'll stick with the three I've got.
But what else is he going to say?
What is the three he's got, by the way? Who's the three he's got?
Valverde, Tchouameni, Camavinga.
No, Valverde
still got Modric.
Valverde plays further forward. He can't.
Still got Modric.
No. You're missing the point here, though. Ancelotti doesn't have a say in it. Florentino Perez will just go out and buy whoever he wants
to
buy.
Listen, there's three clubs, realistically, that he's going to join. It's going to be Real Madrid, Man City or Liverpool. That's his three.
It's already Liverpool third on that list, Don, because they won't even be in the Champions League.
But Dan, Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool could sell it to Jude Bellingham, saying this is a one-off. We've had seven years here, five months.
Why didn't you add Man United to that list? At the moment, you go to Man United, wouldn't you? If Jude Bellingham's no link to Liverpool, why would you go to Man
United? I don't think you'd choose Man United over Real Madrid, Man City or Liverpool.
I'm not suggesting over Real Madrid, I'm suggesting over Liverpool at the moment.
Over Man City?
Well, no. But yeah, I'm saying, why are you putting Liverpool in that list and not Man United?
Because I think what you're doing is I think you're looking at this 4 or 5, 6 months that Jurgen Klopp's had, which is really, really poor. But you're forgetting the 6.5 years that he's been there and the job that he's done. So you can sell it to Bellingham and say, this is a one-off. We're going to win the Premier League with you next season.
What about the 6.5 years he had at Borussia Dortmund and then it all went pear-shaped and he walked away because he didn't feel he could affect it anymore.
You say that.
you say that. There's context around. But there's context around that story. Everyone links Mainz, Dortmund, and Liverpool as a seven-year itch. When he was at Dortmund, it was the summer where he sold Lewandowski to Bayern Munich. Nuri Sahin left.
Yeah.
Mario Götze put a transfer request in.
Yeah.
They start the season badly, and Hans Watzke, they sacked Jurgen Klopp. And years later, he turned around his quotes and he said, "We made the biggest mistake of our lives, sacking Jurgen Klopp. What we should have done was sacked half the team." No. That's where Liverpool are at. You can't be getting rid of Jurgen Klopp now. Get rid of half the team.
I'm not talking
rebuild
about getting rid of Jurgen Klopp. Nobody's mentioned getting rid of
rebuild
Jurgen
it.
Klopp.
But you, give again, him money.
Well, again, I go back to
give
the point.
Great.
A few months ago, you were not sacking half the team. Now you're sacking half the team over one guy.
What would he do with Chelsea's 600 million to what Liverpool have already got defensively and attackers? £600 million, he wins the league and Champions League next season.
Don, let me tell you one thing now. I'd take Liverpool's front line over Chelsea's any day of the week.
Same.
Right. So there we go. There's one side of the team fixed.
Right.
Chelsea have had back problems at the back. Liverpool have still got Van Dijk, they've still got Kanate. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So
it's the midfield then. So it's the midfield then. It's not that hard to work out, is it?
I tell you what. I get it. I get it. It's not an ideal scenario at Liverpool, but I'm afraid one guy's words are falling on deaf ears, right, at the moment.
Which team is more likely for that fourth spot, Stevie? Newcastle, Spurs or Brighton?
It's hard to go against Spurs. Just because they're Spurs, eh?
So Spurs to finish in the fourth?
It's hard to go against them.
But you just said they're Spursy.
Aye.
But
that's the whole reason why they'll end up fourth.
No, it won't.
Because we'll slag them all season. How crap they've
been. Not the Spursy way.
How boring they are. But somehow, some way, they'll end up sneaking in there.
That's not how Spursy works. Spursy is you've got to beat Forest on the final day and you mess it up somehow. And you don't finish fourth.
Did they finish fourth last year?
Yes.
And how did they do that?
I can't remember.
Because they were minging. They were as bad last year as they were as they've been this year. And they still made it. It's completely Spursy.
It's not Spursy.
It is. It's totally Spursy. Somehow.
That's not how
somehow they'll
Newcastle.
Fall over, do a double somersault.
John?
Newcastle. Newcastle. I'm sticking with Newcastle.
Yeah,
4 points clear.
They're running out of juice. Yeah.
Last question. What's the most fractured dressing room that you've been part of? I guess Don would have been part of a few considering the amount of clubs that he represented.
What was the first bit there, Dan?
The most fractured dressing room.
West Ham, I would say.
Yeah.
West Ham, yeah. First year under Glenn Rodo, we finished seventh. Exactly the same team, squad, relegation battle. Bottom three, seen an unbelievable fight after a game once. Di Canio started it. He moonwalked out of it pretty quickly, but he started the fight. Then there was Ian Pearce, look after himself.
Big lad.
David James, Thomas Repka, Christian Daly. Paolo quickly moonwalked out of that fight, and it was all kicking off.
Wow. All on each other.
Well, yeah, because Paolo started it, and he blamed the midfield players. Midfield players blamed the defenders. J-Mo got a mention, the goalkeeper. Then it all just went off.
that's not like Christian. I know he can get a bit heated, but he's normally a level-headed lad, isn't he? But he's a big lad.
And what were you doing, Don?
Sitting there watching it. Hiding. I didn't get involved in that.
Hiding. It's a bit like that. It's a bit like when I told you Eddie Akinbaye took his shirt off and just outside the tunnel at Pride Park.
Yeah, everywhere.
I've never seen. It was like a flock of birds seeing a fox.
God. Stevie.
I got to say, when I left Liverpool and I went to Notts County, I went with Howard. Howard Kendall asked me to go there and be his assistant and play.
Right.
And I had this whole new world was starting. My proper playing career was over.
Yes.
I was still going to play, but I was going to learn all the ropes about managing and coaching and everything.
Right.
And it was a whole new world, and I was so excited.
Yeah.
And then the first day I got there, and I walked in the dressing room, and there wasn't one person that wanted to be there.
Oh.
Every single one of them wanted away. And the first thing he said, hello, the first thing he said was, Oh, what are you doing here?
That's what Craig gets every time he goes out.
That's what the dogs.
Are you doing here? Starts with the dogs, then the kids, and then the wife chimes in right at the end.
That is it. We are done. Thank you very much. ESPN SC back on your screens tomorrow to discuss Spurs, of course, in action against Manchester City. Plus, it's Barca against Sevilla.